Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. Joining me is an entrepreneur who just demystified a big portion of online content for me. I have been on Instagram, not that much, but man, one of the reasons why I'm not on Instagram that much is sometimes I see these companies have beautiful freaking photos. Sometimes I've interviewed people. You might have heard me in these interviews get really excited about the photography that people have on their Instagram accounts. And it's true for other platforms, but Instagram blows me away, because when it's done right, it's meant to blow you away. And I always thought, wow, these people must have found great creative directors, great photographers. They have a talent for it. Well, before we got started, today's guest took me into the back end of his company, Popular Pays, and he said, you know, let me show you how we work. And I saw these brands that I recognized, that I promised him I wouldn't say the names of, who basically said, here's our new product, or here's the product that we're featuring. We'd like a creator to take it and do whatever with it. Take our skincare product and have a man hold it in the forest and be creative with that. And then all these creators, people who are big on Pinterest, Instagram, other platforms, are coming in and saying, well, here's who I am. Here's my account. And here's what I could do for you. And as he's showing me their accounts, I'm looking at their pictures and like, these are stunning creators who are just doing it for fun. And now they get paid. And it's not for like tens of thousands of dollars. I don't know how much I could say about the prices. I guess
talk about it.
Like, one of them was for $800 by a major brand, and they got like phenomenal work for $800. And they didn't have to get involved in the photo shoot or anything. They just put it up and they pick the creator they want, and the creator then gets to create for them. And now they have this beautiful thing that makes me feel like they have taste, but in reality they just worked with someone who has taste. Anyway, that's what today's guest, you heard his voice, his name is Corbett Drummy. He is the founder of Popular Pays. What they do is create software for collaborating with influencers and creators, and it's a little bit more than what I described. Like, if you want to hire somebody to create a photo or video and then run it in their own feed, you could do that too. But the part that blew me away is the part that I had no idea existed, which is these brands are getting creators to create for them. All right, we're going to find out how we built this company thanks to two phenomenal sponsors. The first, you haven't heard me talk about them it's been a while since I interviewed the founder when I needed help hiring a second in command here at Mixergy. It's called COO Alliance. Their founder helped me. I want to talk to you about how they could help you. And the second sponsor you have heard me talk about quite a bit, because it's doing really well for our listeners. It's called HostGator. I'll tell you why they should be the company you use to host your website. First, Corbett, good to have you here.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Do you find that it's hard for you to explain what you do to like at family dinners or something?
No, I think it's like a great challenge, because no matter how complicated the thing that you work on is, you should be able to boil it down to explain it to your parents or your aunt and uncle. I used to have a harder time, and it's getting a little easier, which I think is a good sign.
Huh. What's the revenue that you guys are doing right now?
So we don't disclose that, but I could say that since we went through Y Combinator in early 2015, we've definitely had tens of millions go through the platform and like budgets on it, but we haven't disclosed revenue publicly.
So what you're saying is tens of millions of dollars have been paid from brands to creators?
Yeah, just like it's brand budgets that have gone through the platform to create these like content or posts.
Okay, and all you say is tens of millions of dollars. You won't say whether you guys are doing over. Will you say if you're doing over 10 million?
I don't talk about it, but I do love that you always push your guests. I checked out a couple of them. I love it. Thanks. Ask, right?
Yeah. I do have to ask, because I don't know where you feel uncomfortable saying and why and we're not. And frankly, full disclosure, I've got a number here in front of me. It's not like we're operating completely blindly, but when we took the number from you, we said it would be private.
Yeah. It's an important lesson too. Like I used to be really scared of getting a no, but it's an important thing to do is like orient towards it. You want to get a no?
You know what? I never thought of it that way. Because I don't feel any pain from getting a no, thankfully. I just feel like, well, let's see where this person feels comfortable.
Yeah.
So do you have an example of a brand that we'd know that used you in a way that will illuminate what you do? And then I want to find out how you built up this company, because it's not a common idea.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, what's interesting is we've been extremely fortunate to work with most of the large brands you know and love. Like, a lot of ones that I'm a fan of and users of, like everyone from Samsung or like Bose, who I was showing you, but really maybe like half or more of the Fortune 100s that you've seen have used our platform in some way, and we power the content for a lot of them. But yeah,
so
I think we're just looking at
it. Talk about what they did on your platform to understand.
Yeah, like you know, we were just talking about that Bose example. I was showing some content they've created on it, So basically, you know, we've worked with brands like them to both source content at scale for their Instagram feed, for their paid ads on Facebook, as well as just get posts from influencers. So this might be sending an influencer to an event or just like shipping them product, like a new pair of, actually wearing their headphones right now. So maybe like shipping them headphones and then, you know, getting some great content back and a post back as well from them.
So the influencer would have gotten a pair of headphones and it's on them to come up with something creative and then Bose pays for whatever the photo is.
Yeah, usually brands put out a creative brief to the network saying, hey, look, we're launching this new product or we have this new initiative. We need content that fits X, Y, and Z. And the creator can apply and say, hey, here's my idea for how I'd make that concept come to life. And the brand can review not just the creator and their idea, but also like their profile, like, you know, what's their rating from past gigs, what's their past portfolio of work, all these social stats. And so we try to arm, like of the three main things we do, the first step is helping with creator sourcing and vetting. So it's like your community management. You can either upload great creators you're already working with or use our tools to find and vet new ones.
Got it. All right. I'm looking now. I'm scrolling. This is the problem that I have with any guest who does any work with Instagram. I start getting sucked into Instagram photos.
It's so addictive.
Yeah, it is. And it's kind of cool. And now I get a sense of how this was done, how they had such a diverse collection of photos. And it doesn't have to mean sending out a team to, I don't know, to some dude in a van in the middle of nowhere and finding an
option.
That could just be you guys.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there's a lot of brands like, that's the cool thing about it. Like when we worked at an agency, and I worked at Leo Burnett, the ad agency in Chicago, actually came to Chicago to work there. And when we do a commercial shoot, we'd, you know, get bids from three photographers. We'd pick one, we'd do a shoot, we'd get maybe 12 assets. We'd pay like $40,000 and they'd be limited rights. And you'd only get like one, you know, location. What's awesome here is a brand like Samsung could ship phones to people from Sweden to Florida. And they can source content they could never have gotten from professional shoots. And it lets you also test your, it lets you do these things with content you couldn't have done before. Like A/B testing ads with 50 creative pieces is way different than testing with two. And it's just law of large numbers. You're going to have some winners when you get a lot of pieces of content.
You mentioned that you worked for Leo Burnett. Can you talk about the Coors Light story?
Oh my God. Yeah. So, near and dear to my heart. So, when I joined, I was working on a startup in college, bumped into a recruiter from Burnett, ended up taking an internship, that summer with Burnett. And when I got there, I wasn't 21 yet, but they had put me on the Miller Coors account and we sat down my very first business meeting of my entire career, I think. And, sat down and they said like, you know, to celebrate a new intern, they passed around Keystone Lights. And the first thing I said was like, this is amazing. I'm not even 21 yet. And everyone froze and looked around and wondered like, oh shit, like who messed that up? And they took my beer from me and put me on Coca-Cola for 2 weeks until I was 21. Then I went from Coke Zero back to Miller Coors and I had a great time. I mean, it was a wonderful team. We still actually work with them now. They're users of our software, which is really fun.
Well, I should say Leo Burnett is the ad agency, but that's not the Coors Light story I was talking about. I was talking about how you and your roommate.
Oh my gosh, a different one. Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? So I heard you and your roommate had a case of Coors Light at your place.
So yeah, there's two Coors Light stories when you think about it. I didn't think of this one. To celebrate the fact that I got onto the Coors account, my crazy roommate who turned into be my co-founder, first of all, he had just graduated art school. He drove up from Florida. He was lonely, so he picked up two hitchhikers on the way, which already tells you a lot about him. And I was like, who is this guy? He drove up there and he got out and it's late Sunday night. I'm like already getting ready for bed. And he goes, hey man, I heard you got in the Coors account. Here's like I got us a case of beer. Let's have some to celebrate. And I was like, dude, we got to go to bed. Like our first day of work's tomorrow. And I think he at that point thought, uh-oh, who am I living with? Like this guy's no fun. And
right.
So we had a moment like that. We went to sleep. I woke up. I got ready. I think I made like, you know, eggs. I had breakfast. I was already dressed in dressed in a suit. And Alan, my co-founder, was still in bed. I finally woke him up. I was like, dude, we got to go in 5 minutes. So he just rolls out of bed and he goes, so how about that beer? And I just kind of laughed and was like, all right, man, fine. And so he got a Coors out of the fridge. We shotgunned it before work, or before our first day of work. And the kicker was that when we got to Burnett, the very first like orientation class, it was the president of Burnett, was like, hey, let's play the name game, go around the room and all 40 of you tell me something about yourself. And I was pretty tame. I was like, yeah, my name's Corbett. I went to William & Mary. You know, I like this type of music. I was pretty straight and narrow with that. And Alan got up and he's like, hey, my name's Alan. I have a tattoo in my ass and I shotgunned a beer this morning. And everyone's like, yeah, Alan. And the president, you know, never forgot his name for sure. He was like,
and that was a good thing there.
It was a good thing. If you're creative, I was on the account side. And so the president thought it was hilarious and loved it. And when Alan went to work, just to contrast the two types of the departments, he went out to lunch with his team and they had a beer at lunch. And when he told me later they had a beer at lunch, you know, I was like, oh my God, dude, you're going to get fired. You can't drink at work. And he was the first person to sell in a TV commercial. He was the first person probably to get offered a job. Like he crushed it. He did so well. Eventually we started working on Pop Pays on the side and we had always talked about quitting, but he got kind of antsy and he just said, hey man, I know we've talked about quitting. I just put in my 2 weeks. And I was like, oh no, man. Wow.
Just did it without talking to you beforehand.
And then he goes, I told him you're going to quit too. Yeah. So
as I understand it, the reason the two of you got together is because I guess he messaged everybody and said, yeah, look, I'm looking for a roommate and I want somebody who I like and also who likes to do side projects. Am I right?
Yeah, actually, I believe I messaged the Facebook group and he jumped in immediately and said, I'm in. And he sent this note. And I remember he signed off and said, like, much love, Alan. And I was like, oh, it's so cool. He's like a very like loose and loving and like, you know, guy puts himself out there. And I still use that sign off a lot to this date. But we moved in together. We moved in with 4 interns. We had people. It was fun to have like the epicenter of an intern experience where people would come over and hang. But we tried to launch projects like and startups, like not necessarily startups but projects, during our time there. And one of them, we had 2 really great ideas, 30 total. And one of them, the second, was Pop Pays.
You had 30 ideas total?
He had this running list. Actually, he still has it. He has this list of ideas, and he's never stopped putting things into it. He's an idea machine.
Didn't he go? He's not working with you anymore. He was with you for about a year, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Then he went to Facebook and Instagram. Mm-hmm.
He's been there 5 years now.
Let me see. Wow, 5 years.
Yeah. Check this out. He just took his sabbatical, and instead of, you know, like I would probably like actually Pop Pays after 5 years, we give a month off. And one of our teammates, our first engineer, Steve, just came back and he did what I would do, like relax, recharge, did a little bit of woodworking. He spent time with his kids. Alan, he moved to Berlin for a month and learned how to code at this boot camp. Like he's very, very much about like self-improvement and constantly.
But what I'm wondering is why is the guy who is so into coming up with creative ideas, why is he at a 5-year job?
So, you know, it's fascinating. I think Facebook's done a good job at like continually challenging the teammates there. And I think as soon as you start to get stale, they give you some new opportunities. And, you know, many times he's had an itch, but they let him create a lot there. And so to keep a guy like him for 5 years is quite a feat. And yeah. They've done really well.
Is he at Holmes on Instagram?
He is, just at Holmes, Holmes.
Yeah,
He's an interesting guy. He's really good at stories. He actually launched this thing called Story Schools with one of his teammates. And it's like a, you know, you just give a presentation. It's like an interactive presentation that shows you all these tips and tricks on stories. It made me realize like stories is a new format of creation. Like it's like a Photoshop for your iPhone. You can prototype cool little things in it. And they just presented it. I loved it. And they kind of launched it into like a more global thing that they now present to all their clients. But he just starts projects like that all the time and they let him do those things.
So he's the one who inspired you to leave. The two of you, this is your second good idea. Good idea.
What did you say? Sorry.
What was the other good idea?
So it was actually a program. That when we were at Leobret together, there's this thing called the 4 A's, and they take advertising folks from all the agencies nearby and they give you a client, and ours were the city of Chicago, and they give you a prompt, like a brief. Like again, nothing in advertising has changed. All the things that Pop Pays does, we just took that was offline, we put it online. So the whole creative process of like the client giving us a brief, the strategist working to tighten it up, client approving it, all this stuff, we did it for the city of Chicago, and they wanted to boost tourism. And Alan had a great idea of, see if I remember it. It was like this Tri-City cam where in certain areas in Chicago, they could let us put down like a little photo booth, basically, an all-weather photo booth that would take these kind of animated GIFs or photos, and it lets you easily share it. And it, you can, like, it's kind of stamped with the city of Chicago. So it get a lot of social content out there. And back in 2011 and 12, this was really important to like really easily get great content and filters. Like Instagram popped off because of their filters. And so it let us like scale a lot of social content easily about people having fun, you know, around the Bean in Chicago or all these other landmarks. And we got pretty far. Like I thought we were going to do it. And, you know, we were excited to launch it with the city, but we didn't get that far to the point where we were like producing them or anything.
Let's talk about the party.
Mm, yeah.
One idea, you actually took it to Leo Burnett.
Mm-hmm.
And you said what?
Yeah. So, we were at a party at our house, and Alan said, just kind of giggled, and he was like leaning on our refrigerator, and he said, I want to throw a party that you can't get into unless you have 500 followers. Cause he was like looking around the room, and I think he had just met these Instagrammers that he was following online for a while. I think it was Paul Octavius. He was following him online and met him in person for the first time. And we pitched it to one of our alcohol clients saying like, you know, let's have a party where you get carded at the door if you're 21, and then you get carded if you have 500 followers, which back then was a lot. And the idea being like, we'd have a lot of cool stuff you could take photos of. It'd be very interactive. It's kind of like the Wonder Museum, you know, like all this cool stuff to take photos of.
What a great idea. Okay.
And then, so we pitched that. It got like, you know, verbally approved. Like it got up the chain, eventually got killed by kind of the execs at the time at Burnett. Some of them really loved it, just said we couldn't do it for various like client conflict reasons. But although we were really proud to get it up to like the C-suite, when considering I was like an assistant account executive, we had a mentor at the time who said, hey, don't stop here. Like I've had that before. And these people will be gone in 2 years. Like just keep doing this on the side. And so we did. We got local sponsors instead, and we turned it into a website where when you logged in with Instagram, it would show you all the other things you can get for free in exchange for a post. And that kind of turned into Pop Pays.
In exchange for a post.
Yeah.
So all the sponsors were giving people stuff. All they had to do was post whatever they wanted. Exactly.
The first incarnation was you could get like a free product, like, you know, a cup of coffee or a t-shirt or whatever in exchange for a post. There's no payment, no creative brief. It was just pure bartering, photo for a post.
What was the website? I want to go back to Internet Archive.
It was just the, it was popular. Oh man, what would we call it back then though? I can't even remember. Shoot. I can get you that. I think it was like, we had all these dumb names. Like, oh man, we actually picked popularpays.com because when you could get all this, you know, free stuff in exchange for a photo, we just said it's pays to be popular online. It was open. So we got it, but we had all these other names. Like, it had like, I can't even remember. It was, but we had pitched it, and when we made it into a platform where you could get many things in exchange for a post instead of that one party idea, we changed it from being about this like, you know, party to more of a platform. And that's when we kind of started creating the company.
I gotta tell you, this kind of ties into one of my sponsors, HostGator. Mm-hmm. Anyone who has an idea for a website, just go and freaking create a website. If you go to HostGator.com/Mixergy, if you pick that middle option, and Corbett, this is true for you and anyone else who's listening to, they will give you unlimited website hosting. You come up with an idea, just toss up a website, one click. Do you guys use WordPress when you started?
I actually can't remember. I think I had a engineer friend help me at the time, but it's funny. My cousin was just leaving, just working on a startup as well. And he asked me, who to host from. And I said, like, don't use GoDaddy, but I don't have a good option for you. So I'll go back to him and I'll tell him this.
Yeah. You know what? You will be happy with HostGator. And one of the things that we'll do is if you want, they'll scale up with you. HostGator.com/Mixergy. Really, any idea that you have, just go take it to them. Put up a website within minutes and you're good to go. HostGator.com/Mixergy gets you the lowest price that they have available and gets us to stand by behind you as a company. I'm looking over here to see if I could find your Internet Archive. I love Internet Archive, but for some reason it's not working on Safari lately.
But what a time to start a company now, like all the infrastructure and support out there to launch a new business. It's amazing.
Do you think people still even need a website anymore, or can you just live on Instagram and other social platforms?
For the very first time, you could. I think it's still advisable to get a website, a .com if at all you can, even if the name is kind of odd at first. But getting a site and, you know, having it we've seen apps that launch into consumer apps and all they need is like a social handle and an app on the App Store and it can work.
I like to just hold on to that page, even if it's not my main point of entry. It's just a way for people to connect with me. I was just told that when I first wooed my wife, we went out for this event and I did something and I said, is that a little bit off-putting? She goes, well, no, but it's a little day class A. So I went and I got dictionary.com and I took a screenshot of day class A dictionary.com entry and I put my photo into it and I put that on the site and I got it. It's like that's for awesome. $10, made her laugh. Awesome. Great. So
no, I've bought domains before as jokes for people. You know, when we're talking about some concept, just buy the domain, like might as well just get it. And it's a fun gift, like if it's someone's birthday or whatever.
Yeah. I've had people get domains for me for my son. I realized, wait, there's like three different domains for my son when he was born. People gave it to me as a gift. I'll never forget. By the way, I am looking at your website.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
The first version of your site, it's like just text on a page.
Is there any way I can see it real quick? Because I should show you, man. Versions of our site that were just wild. We had such a cool brand and no product for this period of time where we hired this graphic designer and he took all these old paintings, like Renaissance paintings, and he photoshopped like phones and like selfies. And we had this great branding, but no one got what we did from our site, but it was a really cool piece of art.
I see it. That's 2014. I'm worried about like losing your connection, but I could see it.
Don't worry about it then. Yeah, don't bother sharing the screen.
And now it says popular pays now accepting social currency.
Yeah. So, cause you could just buy stuff with a post. So we said, yeah, we'll take you can swap a photo for a post.
And he said, popular, the dictionary post. Definition is having over 500 followers on Instagram. Those were the days.
We people go around Chicago and just get a whole day of free meal. Like you could do everything from get like a free meal to go up on the, you know, the Willis Tower sky deck. You could just spend the day touring the city just by sharing. Now it's even easier. What's great about now with stories are more than half the traffic across Instagram and Facebook's portfolio of apps. And what's nice about that for this day and age is people are not precious about sharing a story because it doesn't stick. And so it's like very easy for people to share a story about something they believe in, whether it's a cause or a product or whatever. And so if you're a brand and you're just shipping, let's say you're a makeup brand or a clothing brand, you just ship a bunch of, you can find influencers on with our platform, for example. We have a shipping integration. You can just export product to them and ask them to post a story, maybe with a link for when they swipe up, you can track conversions. It's an extremely easy, like low friction way of scaling up content. And you get all this content and when some are working, just boost it with paid spend. It is like...
So I could pay for somebody else's Instagram story to promote that?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize I could do that. Can I do that? Like if somebody writes about me just organically, mm-hmm. can I pay to promote that story?
Yes. So there's some interesting things that have been happening. So for example, we have a little social listening tools, but like you could just, let's say you're anything from like a CBD company to like a pet company or whatever. Mm-hmm. You can just see what people are posting about. You could reach out to them, ask them to post. You can actually boost that photo or story from their handle, and it's usually more effective than boosting from the brand. So,
but they need to give me access to their handle so I can do it. So they need to give my account manager access.
We facilitate it. So like we handle it for like a low transparent fee if you want us to fully manage it, or we just set it up for you if you subscribe on our platform.
But so I could pay you, and then if some random person in my audience decides that they want to post something about this, I could through your software reach out to them and say, can I pay you? And then through your software pay to promote it?
So yeah, like a concrete example, let's just say that like you could just search and see if people posted about it. Or something more general, like startups or whatever. You could say like, hey, this piece of content is great. Can we boost this from your handle to a wider audience? Yeah, we could procure the permissions for you. And then if you know Ads Manager, you can just go in and boost it, or we could do it for you.
How much does that cost?
Depends. So for example, on average, if someone's creating a new piece of content, it depends like what network it is and what the format is. But as a rough example, let's say you see someone posting about startups and you say, oh, this photo's great. Can you just post a new one, but with these tweaks? They might charge you like a couple $100. Maybe they call it $400 for a photo. Or if it's like an Instagram story, maybe like, you know, like double that, like, you know, $500 to $800 for a story with a few taps to it. It depends like how long the story is. And so you can create custom content. And a lot of creators, like if you put out a brief to them and you're upfront saying, we want to boost this photo from your handle, a lot of people won't apply because they're giving away those rights. But the ones that do, they won't charge that much more. And as long as you're transparent and saying, we want to do this, I'd say the average, they might even double their price to give you the rights to boost from their handle. But it's very effective. Like when you're boosting from at Corbett versus at Nike, it's almost like, it's almost usually like a 30 to sometimes 50% more effective on like a CPM or like engagement basis.
Corbett, the thing that I wonder is, and we'll get to the story because I'm here for the story, but I'm freaking fascinated by your business. The thing that I wonder is, I know it's easier for people who have physical products. How does somebody who has a digital product use it? How could I use it?
Great question. So, I mean, one of the challenges for someone that doesn't have a physical product is content creation, because in this day and age, content is oxygen for brands. And let's say you're releasing something, like you're an insurance company, or you have a non-physical product. Staying in front of your customers is so challenging when you don't have a product. And so for our creative community, they can solve that challenge for you. So you can put out a brief and say, this is what our brand's about. How can you make this come to life with your content? And so, you know, there's many ways it could happen. So as an example, number one, like you could put out a brief and say, here's some video assets we have. Can you edit them and stitch them together so it's a better asset for us? That's one way. Can you hear me?
I could give them this interview and then say to them, can you take Corbett's interview and put it in, make it into something?
Yeah. So, sorry, I think my mic cut out for a second, but basically, yeah, you could, okay. You could basically take, let's say you had some clips of something, maybe like bloopers from an interview or whatever. You could say, hey, I need to like recut this asset or whatever. Could you edit this and make a new one for like an Instagram story or a carousel ad or whatever? So that's one way. The other way is brands that don't, we do a lot more custom content than re-editing, but brands that don't have a physical product, they still have a brand identity. And so, you know, this one challenger bank was like, you know, we're about a bankless world. They sourced content that's everything from, you know, getting people in old broken down banks and taking pictures of like old shut down banks, to just like what a bankless world means to them. Like, you know, free lifestyle content. Like I'm not worrying about, I'm on a boat or whatever, not worrying about things. It just, they needed assets to talk to their customers, whether it's in email marketing or Instagram. That's one of the biggest challenges. It's a lot easier for brands with products.
All right. You started out with these parties. The party was doing well. How did you transition away from that, considering how well it was going?
Well, the funny thing about that startups is like when you launch them, they almost immediately start failing. So like when we quit, so we had this site and we had signed up some local merchants that were giving away free products. We were having a really hard time getting people to pay. So like, users were using it, they were loving it, getting free products and posting. Cool content was coming out. And so we're like, it's working, like all this cool content's happening. But a brand just wouldn't pay. And we were targeting like really small brands. Like we don't have any connections. So we just went almost door to door. Sometimes we legit went to the establishment to talk with people, and other times we emailed. But it was a different time. Like now influencer marketing is a piece of every single ad campaign. It's almost like back in the day when I was at Burnett, we'd make a TV concept, and people always ask you, they're like, how does this fit on like digital? How does it fit on bus stops and out of home? Now it's like influencer marketing is a part of every campaign. And furthermore, social content is just like a regular activity brands need to do. Again, it's like oxygen. But back then we had to convince people and tell them why getting it in like an Instagram or to post their followers would be of any value.
Yeah.
So really, it was really hard the first year. The company was failing. We'd raised a little bit of money, but we weren't, I could disclose revenue of that year. I mean, I think we made like 15 grand the entire year. But wow. When we, Alan had left and I parted ways with our other co-founder, Nathan Michael, who was, he and I and Alan all lived together. We started the company together. It was really falling apart. And myself and one other engineer, Steve, we kind of rebuilt it and we launched the platform that you see today. And the only thing we changed was we enabled a creative brief so brands could say what they wanted versus take any photo. So the creative brief, as well as ability to accept and deny content and payment. So really just changing, adding a brief, adding choice and control of the content and payment. We made, I think, 20 grand in 1 month versus 15 the entire year before that.
Because these brands said, we want to have some determination over what happens. And then it became more about that than even the party.
Well, it was really that when we had those facets together, we also, there's one crucial thing left out was we started talking to not even like huge brands at the time, like not necessarily a Nike, but like kind of like a startup or growth brand or mid-tier brand, but they saw the value of getting content for cheap and getting posts. And remember back then, I don't think they had ads on Instagram. So people wanted to get on there. And so when we rolled that out, we launched it, we emailed some brands and we got, yeah, I think we'd made like 15 the entire year before. I think we made like 21 that one month when we launched it in like October of 2014, right before we got into YC. We had actually applied to YC and never heard back first. And then when we launched this, we showed them like our growth and they finally let us in. It was a stroke of luck though. Like we went out there. I practiced I pitch a lot. It's like a 5-minute interview. And just by stroke of luck, like when I was demoing the platform, Nike was in the platform spending. And I was like, oh, this happens all the time. Like this is a really cool. And I was almost walking out and I call him the faux founder, Steve. The engineer, he's like, wait, we have an iPhone app. And we got to demo the app and they were impressed with the product, the traction, the growth. And they gave us a shot. Like I remember, Alexis from Reddit, like called us to tell us we got in and my heart was thumping and it was a really cool night. It was very fun.
Was Pete Dolan in there with you too?
He was. Yeah. So when we were talking about the, the people that help you like sponsor and
COO Alliance, my sponsor. Yeah.
He was, Pete Dolan's our head of operations. And so at the time we had a really, skeleton crew. We had a head of ops, a head of sales. Steve was, we had like 2 or 3 engineers. It was a really lean crew, but
who has a head of operations at that early stage? What does he do that's so important?
I mean, interestingly, he joined and he was an account manager, but so many things go on at a startup where I'm always focused on, there's always some most important problem. It's usually something breaking. Maybe it's fundraising, maybe it's hiring. And there's so many important things that need to get done to run the business. And so many times I'm finding myself like focused on something like I'm out fundraising or I'm really on this hiring blitz. And he's really at home running the business. We have, everyone on our executive team, all of our teammates are incredibly important. But it's really, you really need when you're launching a company to have someone that can help you make sure that those things don't fall through the cracks. Cause actually some of those operational things can really bite you in the butt. There's some cases, for example, of like paperwork things. Like if you don't know what an 83B is, you should, and because they can really screw you over. And so having someone that really can make sure that the business is running and things are getting done, I kind of charge ahead and there's someone there at home making sure things are not falling through the cracks, and it's invaluable.
I think you're the first person that I've heard who went in with that type of a role into Y Combinator. All right, let me talk about then my second sponsor, which is the COO Alliance. Cameron Harold was a guy who was... he was a chief operating officer, basically the second in command. You could give it any type of name. What do you guys call, what's the role with you?
So it's like VP ops. Definitely when you're going through YC, we had like director of ops. We're not quite the COO stage yet. We're still a small company, a little over 40, like 40 people. But yeah, we say like VP, we have VP titles for now.
So he was that. There are lots of different names, general manager, lots of different names for this. But basically, it's a second in command. The person who, when the head person comes up with the idea, has to make sure to execute, be there all the time in the office and make sure that everything is running while the company is trying to figure out the next thing and grow to the next thing. So Cameron did that for 800 Got Junk. And God knows every one of us in the U.S. sees their trucks everywhere. They were a tiny company before he got in with them. And then he grew it with the founder to over $100 million company. What he realized was there are a lot of organizations for COOs. There are a lot of organizations to make the founder better, but there's nobody who cares about people like him, the second in command. And he said, you know what? I'm now at a point in my life where I could do that. And he created the COO Alliance. This is an organization where people who are second in command can get together, can get feedback, advice from each other. They could get training from other people, but also get mentorship from him. If this is you, actually Corbett, as the founder, and you are looking to bring your COO more mentorship, more direction from their peers, the COO Alliance is for you. He is not only putting this together and making it available to MixerG listeners, he is also guaranteeing that this will be some of the best money they've ever spent. If you don't get a 10x return on your investment in being a part of this, you will actually get your money back. It's a 10x ROI or 100% of your money back. I've never seen this before. I'm not even pitching you on signing up. I'm instead going to tell you, go over to COOalliance.com/Mixergy and just get pre-qualified. All that's going to do is see if you're the right fit, And I'll be honest with you, for most people, it's not going to be the right fit. But if you are the right fit, you can talk to them and see how this will help change not just your second in command, but also change your company. Guaranteed, it's the COOalliance.com/Mixergy.
There's definitely a need there. Like, you know, there's a lot of founder groups. But as you said, there's, you know, you don't have the same all the time. I actually haven't heard of one for COOs or head of operations. And you know, we try to have each of our execs and folks have like ongoing education opportunities. And so those are things, it's really important for everyone to have kind of a mentor group or like a way to continue to learn about their craft.
Yeah. And like you said, this is a group of people who are really in charge of a lot within a company, mm-hmm. but people don't pay enough attention to them. All right. You finally got money from Y Combinator and clients.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how you got more clients. How did Nike get on your platform, for example? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. After we finally raised like 2 million, we had scraped for months. It took us like 3 months to raise 100. And when we first started, and another 3 months to raise another 200, it was scrappy. And I think we closed at 2 million in like a month and a half. And so we were off to the races.
Wait, why were you able to close so much?
You know, there's this phenomenon, and I've seen it beyond just YC, but the demo day phenomenon is super real. I've seen it with cohorts of like, coding boot camps, other types of boot camps where they have like they train people, and then there's like in an exhibition where like you kind of showcase the talent, whether it's startups like Techstars or YC or coding boot camps. There's intense competition, and it's like the same feeling that you get if you're like a VC and you get a warm intro. You kind of look at the person who that's coming in from that intro. You look at them in a different light because they've been kind of like brought into you via someone you know versus a cold outreach. You kind of ignore that a little bit. With the demo day thing, it's like the competition is a really big thing. Everyone is almost like, you look at everyone in that light because they have this like stamp of approval from this organization. There's all these other people fighting for it. And I think it's really just like people inherently aren't really independent thinkers, and they only want to do things when other people do it. Not just investors, but you know, employees that are employers that are hiring. And so at YC, you know, we just all presented our stuff. There's intense competition. The rounds get filled up super quick. And yeah, it's never that easy, but that was definitely our easiest round.
Because you're saying once somebody is into you, then everyone else feels that sense of social credibility, and they start.
There's FOMO, like no one wants to miss a deal. And it's a really great phenomenon for like, usually almost always investors have the upper hand unless you're like a hyper growth company. It's like when we were starting out, we never had any leverage with investors, but that was the first time where we were maybe even not quite on level playing field. We might've actually been a little bit above because we were oversubscribed, but it was a really great dynamic for the founders for sure.
So
the customers.
No, one of the things that I heard about, we'll get back to the customers in a moment, but one of the things I've seen is that AngelList will empower, alumni of one Y Combinator to go and invest because they realize that the alumni are deep into the community, and before demo day, they already know who's going to be a hit at demo day. Did you see that when you went through YC?
Yeah, as in like there's the alumni demo day.
Oh, do you do that before? And that's where the angel.
Yeah, so I know that every year before the investors come, they have the alumni one. So you could go and you could see the pitches first and invest as an alumni. So the alumni kind of get the first look at it, I guess. And it's both a practice thing as well as, you know, we raised a small amount from the alumni session. So it's a real thing. And so it sounds like AngelList has some folks going there as well. And
they give them money because they help them create syndicates or something.
Yeah, it's so smart. Wow, right. They're hacking it. I mean,
I don't know that I'm supposed to talk about it publicly, but
what's
their
founder's name? Like Naval. I mean, they're also smart.
Naval, yeah, super smart.
I've heard interviews. He's a very zen guy too. He's like, you know, he inspired me for like a week to try to drink less caffeine. And I was like, all right, I give
is
up.
Is it working?
I've gone fits and spurts, like, you know, starts and stops with it. He was just saying like, you know, you can have a lot more, I forget how he was phrasing it, but like he tries to wake up, you know, without an alarm clock and not to drink caffeine and just have a more even energy level throughout the day. And it's true. It really does work. But then some work happens, you get stressed out or tired, and you can fall right back into your old habits pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's the thing about traveling. You go away, everything's different, and then you come back. No.
Yeah, I've been traveling a lot, and definitely it ruins your. I'm really keen on. I track a lot of habits. I've been tracking them for like 3 years, but every time I travel, I get off my game. I just track it on Excel sheet. It's pretty manual, but my hope is one day I can like give this gigantic spreadsheet to some AI machine, and it'll tell me all these cool things. I have already learned a lot from it. Like there's certain habits that I know are cornerstone, like for example, sleep. If I don't get certain things, like actually one of the biggest movers on my happiness, like I track happiness. One of the biggest movers is how productive I am. It's really weird, but,
you mean when you're more productive, you're happier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not vice versa.
It is a like before and after effect where if I have a day where I kind of like block out, like I try to, you know, make a list of the most important things to get done that day and block off time during my day to work on them and fill up my day with those activities. And if I can execute really well on those and get them done, it leads to a lot of happiness. And I like just being, I guess, in the zone.
What are you tracking? One of the thing that I like tracking a lot is my sleep. I just wear my old Apple Watch. It keeps track of how long I've slept and how deeply. It's really so helpful.
You know what I miss? There was this awesome startup called Hello Sleep, and it was such a cool sleep tracker. It was as if Apple designed like a little home device. Yeah, it's like a little orb. Really cool UI. I learned a lot. Like it'd say things like, you know, it's too bright in this room or the air quality's bad, and it kind of encouraged you to change things, and it just tracked you really well. It woke you up when you were in like a light sleep mode. It would then sound the alarm within like a 30-minute window. It was really cool. And then I mean, hardware is so hard. I bet what happened was they went to build V2, they missed some either hardware window or funding window, and it's crash and burn, but they'd raised like 40 million. Hardware is so hard.
It is a beautiful device. I'm looking at it on Amazon. So then what do you track that's kind of weird or different but useful?
Let's see.
Do you track what you eat?
I do. Well, not like I track how often I like eat like salads or like trying to eat some greens throughout the day. It's funny. One thing I found that's really funny is that by far the easiest thing to accomplish is just like spending 5 minutes meditating, for example, is the hardest thing to do.
Right.
Yeah.
So you know what I would want is I'm like you. I track because frankly the Apple Watch will track a bunch of stuff anyway. Mm-hmm. I just want someone to go and right now do what you're suggesting, which is just go find some patterns. I watched this YouTube video of a science teacher who's been tracking everything for years, including like his happiness on a scale of 1 to 5, and he recognized some patterns, but he had to go and do the math himself and go and look. I want something that just does it for me.
Yep,
make
I agree.
The connection for me.
I agree.
All right. So talk about the first sponsor, the first customers like Nike.
Yeah.
Hit them.
Yeah. So, all right. So interestingly, we talked with a bunch of our creators and they were getting reach outs from brands. And so they introduced us to the first brand. So, you know, there's these jeans companies or like apparel companies. And so the first deals were from them. We tried back then. Now we've been able to move a lot more towards SaaS, but back then the product wasn't there. But we had scraped a bunch of like lists and we just hit up all these lists with emails and email marketing. And we got some initial customers that way. But really what we found for that period of time was we needed to move upstream. And although now we've been able to scale down and we can work with the smallest startups and they can get value because we have a tier that works for them, at the time it still required some manual effort. And so we focused further upstream on the bigger brands like, you know, the McDonald's of the world. And we just got salespeople that knew that brand world, the branded agency world. And really for our first years, I mean, all of our sales were coming through that channel. We had to scale
a
sales team.
Because you hired a team of people who'd already worked with these companies. Is that right?
Well, yeah, it was totally foreign to me. I never built a sales team ever. I mean, the first seller I hired, I was just in a co-working spot and I heard him on an interview. And I turned around, I was like, you sound like you know what you're doing. Like, what are you up to? And, but we encountered some salespeople that knew the world of marketing and advertising. And it's a very unique world. Like, I think SaaS sales is very scientific and universal. And if you can sell like a sales intelligence tool on a SaaS basis, you can go around and sell a different type. With marketing and advertising, working with brands, agencies, it's a certain skill set. And after kind of interviewing and just talking with the sellers like this, it opened my eyes to, first of all, oh my gosh, I thought these brands are unattainable. It turns out we can totally deliver on what they needed. Like for example, the guy said like, hey, if you can deliver X amount of million impressions, I could get you, you know, 150 grand. And I was like, we can do that. And he got us a big brand deal and it kind of opened the floodgates for us.
Because what they were looking for was just impressions and that's an easy thing to sell. And still, when you and I talked about what the company does today, you started by emphasizing that that brands can get creatives for their own channels. Is that now the majority of your business getting content for brands, or is it getting influencers to talk about brands?
I would say like 80% of the campaigns actually involve both. It actually involves getting content from creators that they can use and also getting those creators to post to the creator's own channel.
Got it. But
yeah. Because really, even if you're just paying for a post, kind of half the cost is just the creative development. And so brands often say like, look, we need a bunch of content, but our main goal is just awareness. So we want great content and we want the awareness. And really the third key tenet that kind of has really risen in the last year or two is that once you get content and some great influencer posts, just take the best content and amplify it. Like you've already paid for the content, put some budget behind it and boost it out.
And that means put it on your channel, but also promote it on their channel. And the idea, got it.
So, yeah, so it's like,
just both.
Somebody, yeah, and when I say boosting, you can either do it from, for example, at Nike, or you could boost it from at Corbett, and it can be about Nike, but it can be on my feed.
Are they just measuring impressions? Is it largely brand or ROI? Are they trying to get people to actually sign up to something, to buy?
Big brands tend to do impressions as the goal. However, savvy startups, like if you're getting some people coming out of Techstars NYC or startups and companies like the, you know, Home Chefs of the world who just really know their customer acquisition cost, they use influencers for conversion. It's hard though. Like the funny thing about influencer marketing is that 9 times out of 10, it doesn't work for an ROI. And that's the thing that no one gets. You have to really set up campaigns correctly to get an ROI. As an example, mm-hmm. one of our teammates has run a ton of campaigns on YouTube, doing conversion campaigns. And what you would do, let's say you're an apparel company, you would get a bunch of people that might fit your target demo or you think they'd work, maybe 30 people, and you ship them product, they post maybe with a coupon code. Only like 5 of those 30 or something, like only a small group will actually return positive and drive conversions for you. And so it's kind of a portfolio approach where you're sourcing and vetting people, collaborating with them, and then monitoring how it's performing. And you're kind of switching out like the ones that don't convert, you know, find new ones. For the ones that do, keep working with them. Mm-hmm. And we really build the tech to make that easy, but it is really hard. The thing that I would say though, it's much, much easier to just get a piece of content, for example, on Instagram and boost it to get an ROI. So personally, like Pop Pays, you know, we get well over, you know, we take our own content from creators and we boost it on stories, for example. We get well over that amount back in terms of revenue because, you know, we're taking great content, pushing it out Instagram stories, and people are swiping up to go to a link and subscribing, and we get revenue back. So as a brand, I would say what I would do is if you're trying to get an ROI with influencers, get creators, have them make content, have them post, and take the best post and just boost that and add tracking links. And that's the like formula for success for ROI.
You know what, that kind of explains when I'm on YouTube lately, I've been watching these small creators who I'm kind of addicted to because they're into some crazy thing like using the iPad as a main computer, which is the thing I've been crazy for the
last couple of years.
Oh yeah, I love it.
That's hard.
I don't do it for recording here because I need certain things, but for everything else, oh, it's so good. That's good. And there are the people who have like 5,000 views on their YouTube posts or 10,000 max. And then they'll have an ad from something like Paperlike, which is a sticker. You know Paperlike?
No, but I was just reacting to like, they might be smaller accounts and previously, like it's definitely not worth an agent's time to like work with brand deals like that. But where platforms come in is, you know, let's say you get whatever 5 cents per view or whatever it is. These are small deals, but we can really democratize that. Like it previously wasn't worth a brand's time to work with, you couldn't work with 100 people with email and spreadsheets. But yeah, you could easily find like, you know, 100 creators, ship them product, just see which ones work for you. And whether you're getting great content or conversions, you know, it lets you scale that in a way that just wasn't possible. So I can see like even small creators, even 5,000 views, because sometimes if you have 5,000 viewers, sometimes they're like super honed in to what you're talking about.
I don't remember brands for Jack. I don't remember names, somehow Paperlike sticks in.
So what is Paperlike?
It's a sticker you put on your iPad that if you're a designer, if you're an artist that uses the Apple Pencil, you want a little bit of friction from the pencil to feel like a paper. So it's transparent, but it gives a little bit of friction so that it's easier for you to draw or take notes. And
whoa, that's so cool.
Right?
Yeah.
$5, $10 product, and these people who have 5,000 views will promote it. And that's the type of thing.
Yep. Let's just take that. Let's just say it's $10.
Yeah.
5,000 views. If it's so targeted, like here, I use only my iPad or I'm a designer and use my iPad. you don't have to get 10 people to like use that coupon code for it to break even. Plus you've got content. And so you're getting free content as a brand, you're getting net positive ROI. And so as long as you can keep scaling it up, it's like an unending source of conversions for you.
And so a company like that would come to you and say, mm-hmm. and by the way, you keep calling it, what are you saying? You're saying Pop Pays, right?
Pop Pays, yeah.
Instead of Popular Pays. Do you guys own poppays.com? Do you know, own the name?
We do not.
You keep calling it that.
All right, I'll out myself here. I went to, lowballed that guy that owns it a long time. He'll probably never read this. If he does, it's hi. But when we were first starting out, I didn't have any money. And so I offered him like something very small and he turned it down. And I would, we'd get it today. It's not a big deal, but he never responded back. So it just kind of fell through the cracks. But, we know it as Pop Pays, but we definitely, we kind of own that. Like when you search for our name, it's there's not many other things around it. So we do a pretty good job with when people are trying to find us. But yeah, it's funny. Domains are a funny thing.
Yeah, it's still a pain in the butt. Yeah. So the first customers was you going door to door, literally to local stores. Yeah. Am I right?
Yeah.
You personally, Corbett. Then it was you guys starting to level up, partially by calling, but also then by hiring others who could call for you. And then mm-hmm. it was hiring others who had the relationships and saying, look, this has got, that's what it is.
Yeah. So if I walk through the journey, it was like door to door to local businesses. It didn't work. It was, door to door and emailing local businesses. We kept moving upstream and we went to like scraping lists of companies and just, emailing and calling them. And we got some sales from that. But then we kind of got a peek into the big brand world where we realized we could execute on these campaigns and they weren't that much harder, but it was this whole world of agencies and brands. And we met a few people that knew that world and helped us understand who to reach out to get those deals. So finally working with some sellers that had relationships. And then we started working our way through the brands and agencies as like direct channels. We just hired sellers to work through those.
How hard was it to get creators, to get influencers on your
platform?
You know
what? So many hard things with starting Pop Pays. That wasn't one of them. There's always the, 1 in 5 campaigns will have some really weird thing. For example, like find me people that use iPads as their main thing. But again, you could use our search tool and search for certain keywords and find them. And we had a lot of word of mouth. And so every week there's like a couple hundred people that sign up just organically. But because we have this, brands either uploading people that they're already working with or we're searching and adding new ones. So over time, every time we get a weird niche, we end up fulfilling that campaign and they kind of stick around. So it just is like a snowball effect.
So if you fill in a niche of some creators who feature iPads as main devices, they come in to get that one job, but they're in the platform in case something else happens. And now you've got them in the platform and in your world.
Nice marketplace effect there.
Yeah, that is. You know what? It kind of goes back to something Jason Fried, the creator of Basecamp, told me years ago in an interview. A lot of people said, hey, ask him to talk about how, if you have a marketplace, who do you start with? How do you get both? Mm-hmm. And he said, go after the person who has the money. If you get the person who has the money, the people who earn it are more likely to come.
Very true. So there's always one side of the marketplace that's harder. And so for us, it was like, if you can get the brand's budgets, it's really easy then to go to the creator and say, hey, I've got this budget. Will you do this work? However, you've got something on your hands where the other side of the marketplace is the bottleneck for growth. So case in point, Airbnb, they actually might have had, I think, more challenge finding the supply. And that is special. So whenever you have a marketplace, we really moved into like enterprise software. But if you're operating a marketplace, where you want to be is where like the demand is so strong, but the supply is actually the bottleneck. Like that's special. Mm. Very special.
You're saying that's the right place to be because that's
where you want to be. Yeah.
Where you get more people and money.
It's so rare though. It's so rare.
By the way, I've been taking notes on you. One of the things that I like about you is you're so freaking quotable. Like I never take notes on people in with like quote marks. You said content is oxygen for brands. You said, I wrote that down. The thing about startups is when you launch them, you almost immediately start failing.
That is true. No, it's funny. I don't think if you think I'm quotable, I've got some people for you. Like two people come to mind. So first of all, Alan Holmes, the guy that I was mentioning, just nugget after nugget of things. Also, Jason Peterson, he was from Havas. He left and started his own agency, but he had this sign outside of his office and it would say things like, the ROI of social media is that your brand will fucking exist in 5 years. And he would cut to the core of something like, I would get those questions back in like 20, sorry, I don't know if swearing is bad.
No,
sorry about that.
Right. Yourself.
In 2012, I would get those questions from, say it again.
Saying be yourself.
Oh, so I thought you said be yourself.
No.
Yeah, in 2012, I would get these questions from agencies like, what's the ROI from this? And he would just cut to the heart of it by saying like, the ROI is that your brand will freaking be here in 5 years. And he had a quote like every week and I'd always take a picture of it. And he's very quotable. So is Alan. But no, I don't know. You just going through this process, we've come across certain axioms. And it's funny because when we made a move to like enterprise software, and kind of almost like launched a startup within a startup to grow this SaaS vertical, we started with the brands we used to turn away, like startups that we used to say like, hey, you don't have 25 grand, like you can't do a normal campaign. We would turn them away and we launched a new tier where, you know, the lowest tiers were just, it's very affordable for them on a month to month basis.
I don't understand the difference between that and what you were doing before. Like, you told Brian Benson, our producer here, you said that you guys have a SaaS product. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between the SaaS product and the marketplace?
I'll give you an example. So, let's just say like, you know, a Nike over here, they'd come to us and say like, we need 50 videos. And we'd say, all right, you know, if you, we'll guarantee that result for 25 grand or whatever. So it's either a content goal or maybe a reach goal. Like we need 5 million impressions and they'd use the same, it's the same product and same platform. But the difference is they'd keep picking people until the goal is hit and it's outcome based. And so we're selling the outputs. And what's radical about that is that, you know, we could come in and sell crazy cost-effective content, get generate impressions at a great degree. But a lot of brands and agencies wanted to buy just on a one-off basis. What's interesting about the space is it's really changing. It's become such a mainstay of so many brands. We'll talk to some brands and they're working with like 600 influencers on spreadsheets. And so they just clearly need an ongoing software make for like an operating system.
They've got their influencers, they've got their creative people. They just need a way to manage it. And they come to you and now they pay to use the software to manage it, not to find the connections. They don't pay you per impression, nothing like that.
Exactly. So instead of launching a campaign where the goal is like 50 videos and they're just paying a flat campaign fee, here they're just paying like, for example, a couple $1,000s a month. And if they're just shipping out product, that's their only cost. Usually though, they're paying creators too. So instead over here, they're not paying for a set campaign. It's just like a monthly fee. And then the, you know, there's also, they might pay creators on top of that, but it's radically more, cost effective over here.
I get it. You know what? I remember interviewing the founders of High Smile. Do you know those guys?
I don't know.
You know, they created this teeth whitening thing that was just blowing up on Instagram, partially because they would find influencers and they would pay them to take before and after shots or do YouTube videos of themselves.
I've seen them.
I asked them, what software are you using to manage this? Mm-hmm. And I think they looked at me like I was crazy. Like, come on, it's just CRM or spreadsheet. It's not that big of a deal.
So check
but
this out.
But it was crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll hit them up because what we found, I'll give you a quintessential example.
Yeah.
We were working with a brand that had, I don't know, call it 200 people, but let's just as a thought experiment, just say 10. You have 10 influencers and you have them take a 5-segment Instagram story. Like content creation has been, like the content requirements for brands has almost been doubling every 2 years, like Moore's Law. So now where since the advent of Instagram stories, a brand like them might need, you know, these, they might every month be generating like 30 Instagram stories. And if they have these, like even let's say 10 creators, 5-segment story each, that's 50 videos where if they're requesting like, oh, can you please change video number 3 of 5 on your segment? They're all jumbled up and you lose the story. It's so confusing. And when we make software where they can come in and not only come in and say like, oh, please edit 3 of 5 and it keeps it as one unit, but they can track the revision history and make sure that they have made that edit. It's just like collaboration software.
Yeah. So it's beyond just managing who you're paying and what their result is. It's also editing and giving feedback on the project.
It's like software for creative collaboration.
I saw even behind the scenes when you showed me stuff and you said, Andrew, you could record it, but please don't share this with anyone. Yeah. It was just like a way to, one of the features that happened to notice was I could message my team member and say, hey, look, Rebecca, this one's really good. Or Steve, we cannot work with anyone who has this type of image, right?
And we're super proud of the software and definitely down to demo it. I just didn't know what brands I'd ask a brand if I can share their info.
I'm looking at their stuff. It's like, we did start with the spreadsheet, but we don't, but now we don't as such because there's so many influence out there. It's a big influence. So basically now what they're doing is they don't have a way to manage it. So they just say, we'll ask people. And if they do, they'll take it. If not, forget it. Mm-hmm. It's more of a time.
I'll hit him up. I'll tell him.
It's too hard to put in a CRM. I can make an intro.
Oh, yeah. So check this out. We make it so easy that they just can give us a list of emails and it would actually shoot out an invite to those influencers and say, hey, HiSmile wants to manage this campaign through this platform. And it auto brings them into the campaign.
They're doing $15 million in revenue 2016. I want to close it out with this. Speaking of quotable, one of the things that I highlighted in in Brian's notes on his producer conversation with you was you said to him, once you get to a certain size, every problem is a people problem.
Yeah.
Put some flesh on that. What do you mean by that?
I remember, I think it was YC. They said that, it was a guy from Airbnb, Brian Chesky. He said, in a talk that, when he started, you're building a product, but then eventually you're building the company that builds the product. And if you think about a lot of roles, like let's just take engineering, you become an individual contributor, you're getting more and more proficient and you're mentoring people. But at a certain degree, as you graduate kind of in your career, you don't always have to go towards management, but when you think of the company, as you continue to level up these roles, each becomes a people problem. So it could be recruiting, culture, almost always culture. And everything, you think you have like a growth or sales problem, but you actually have a people problem. And so the kind of magic of running a business, and you know this, I mean, your business is bigger than ours. I saw your notes, but like, I think a lot of us realize that as you get bigger and bigger, the challenges are like people and communication. They are not like this technical challenge of how do we like scale this infrastructure. That's actually pretty straightforward. It's always complex.
Just building the team has been hard. I heard creating the culture was hard. I think there was a Forbes article that I read about you talking about the year that you, was it a year where you said we're going to focus on culture?
Well, it was actually Alan, when we started Pop Pays, Alan, Nathan, and I sat down at a restaurant and Alan had the foresight to say like, we need one question that we can always ask ourselves so we know if we're on the right path. And it's like tremendous foresight and it's really served us well. But he said, how about, is it worth sharing? And for us, that meant like you saw the content. We wanted content that was coming out of the platform that was worth sharing. So we were proud of it because we didn't want to work at a place where we put in all this blood, sweat, and tears. And then we were embarrassed about like the quality that came out. And so we started with the content, but then we said, look, it should apply to this experience of using the product itself, or even the people we hire. The people we hire should be so good that we want to shout it from the rooftops, even things we tweet. And we said, if we aren't proud of the thing, we're not going to do it. So we'd rather do a small amount of things really well than a lot of things okay. And it's a challenge we have to live up to. You know, we've strayed at times, but yeah, we, every 6 months we go over it. So tomorrow, actually, we have our all hands where we kind of run through the mission and vision and talk about the opportunities and challenges for the next 6 months. But we always touch on culture. And
when you're saying culture, it's like, will the people we have here be the types of people that we want to talk about, spread about? If when you're talking about the content, is the content being created on our platform shareable? Do people actually want to share it? That's the measure. Not only do people like it, but are they willing to spread it?
Yeah, it's the mission. Like at the end of the day, the mission is to build something worth sharing. So like for us, it's not enough just to build a company. I think you even said this in your piece, but it was like you didn't do it just to survive or like, you know, survivor, like the mission is to build something special, something worth sharing.
The growth.
So we try
to you phrase it for yourself. What's the phrase?
Build something worth sharing. So create something worth sharing.
So if Y Combinator's thing is build something people need or people want.
It's like make something people want, which some people say is uninspiring, but I think it's wonderfully simple. Like make something people want. That's the hardest part of the startup.
I'm so surprised they said that versus something people need, but I guess,
right?
Because you could need stuff, but not really want it.
For what it's worth, I think it's more important to like orient towards, having a painkiller versus a vitamin.
Right.
But I think Paul Graham probably said it offhand, like in an essay or in a talk. And he just said like, when he's talking about the rules of startups, he said rule of startups, like number one, make something people want. And he just meant like, make something that it is what it is. But I've always thought that Paul Graham is kind of like the Hemingway of startup writing. He's so simple.
Yeah.
I remember when we went through and I first met him, he goes like, are you Caruso drummer? And I was like, Paul, that is close enough. Yes, I can be. And so now it's like, I don't have many nicknames, but that's if the folks from YC know that one.
It's just kind of stuck. Whatever. I do feel like, I remember Alexis Ohanian, I said to him, why did you even end up with, how'd you even end up with Paul Graham? He wasn't investing at the time. He said that Steve Huffman, his co-founder, was so into reading Paul's stuff. And this was back when he's still writing on
Posthaven? It's like, or he's writing on some like old.
It's a Yahoo store essentially, yeah, which is what yeah. he created, the thing that became a Yahoo store. He's still writing on it. It was just like very few essays, but they were so hard hitting, even though they were short and there weren't a lot of them, that Steve decided we have to get on a train, go see this guy speak. And then he got funding from him.
I was the same way. I was reading his stuff long before. I remember when we were starting our company and at the College of William Mary, I think we were like the only startup to ever come out of there before like Thomas Jefferson, or like after Thomas Jefferson went through. And it's like a very, like very not a startup environment. It's like Colonial Williamsburg here with like musketeers and like colonial reenactments. And they have like a good, you know, finance school, but we're starting the startup. And actually after that, kudos to my friend, Todd Saunders. He launched a company the year after and he's done well. They just raised a round as well. But basically we're launching this company. I remember reading Paul Graham's essays at you know, Colonial Williamsburg, right in the campus, and thinking like, wow, like this guy, like I love this culture. Like instead of, you know, they're kind of counterintuitive to what you think of startups as. Like he was advocating for things like, hey, actually you should want to be like ramen profitable and like, like all these things. I was like, yeah, everyone else is saying like spend. He's like, you want to invest when you're sure everything's working, but there's tremendous power in being like profitable. And which I'm sure you know
ramen
about.
Profitable, two words, just communicate so much. Be so well, you can live on ramen.
Yes.
Profitable, but also not so much that you're, you know, like living out. Just be super cheap.
He nailed so much of it. And I was so impressed by the clarity of thought behind that, that I applied, you know, and when I remember we were looking at AngelList and there was this company that they were raising on this, some syndicate there, whatever. This is before we went through. And it said like, oh, teams from YC and blah, blah, blah. And I remember thinking like, God, they have it made. Like how nice of that to be a YC company. It'd be so easy to raise. But they were such like an institution. I applied, tried to get in really hard, didn't even really hear back. And I think we got lucky with timing the second time around. And it was one of the best experiences. It was like Hogwarts for startups. Like we went in and met all these idols and met a bunch of friends. And it was only 3 months, but it was really special.
By the way, I've been looking up some of the people you mentioned, like Todd Saunders?
Yeah.
Ad hoc.
Yeah.
Yeah. Personal digital assistant for advertising. I'm looking him up. Actually, he's a Techstars guy.
Yeah. I lived in this house on campus. I was actually originally in a band with some friends. Our drummer like fell down the stairs, broke his arm. We didn't really have, a band was on shaky footing. I applied to business school and ended up in this class where like the assignment was to make a business plan, and we ended up making that startup. And we figured we'd just make it real. But Todd ended up living in that house the year after me. He graduated, went to Google, but then left to start that. And they actually just, you should get him on, but he's had an interesting journey. They started an ad tech, like this platform to manage your marketing spend. And recently they realized that like the consumer market for like installing flooring was just kind of Byzantine and not disrupted. And
this is new, Floorforce.
But basically, they were doing all this advertising and it was converting really well. And they figured, let's like vertically integrate. So they bought someone in that space. So now they can handle all the marketing and like customer acquisition to drive there. And they were just making a ton of
flooring companies.
I know. Well, you got to take it's so hard now to find an industry that's not disrupted, because like Warby Parker and all these people took all the ones that are obvious. So they found one. They found one, and they've been crushing it.
All right. Yeah. The website for anyone who wants to go check this service out. I freaking love your design.
Thank you.
Whoever did the design of the app itself, really nicely done.
So shout out to Masha, our designer. She's amazing. And it actually I'll send you a link, but her portfolio is amazing. Her design touch is amazing. She's wonderfully quirky. Her portfolio has like an animated head of her that's floating around. When you click on it, it multiplies. She's great. But yeah, we have a really stellar product.
So because it's information dense. Like when you're talking about a creator, it's not just here's a link to their Instagram. It's information dense to the point where you could feel overwhelmed, but it never feels it. It always has this sense of calm and serenity, and the data is there when you need it. Trust us, you'll look at it. And don't feel overwhelmed, because there are these beautiful photos too. It's the whole thing is really well done.
Serenity is a great word. I like to use that. It's like, it takes tremendous amount of effort to keep things simple and clean when there's all this data packed together. And they continue to do an awesome job, the whole product team.
Really well done. Really, both when I saw the back end of the software when you were showing it to me before, and also anyone could see it on your homepage, which is what kind of got me started on this path. It is popularpays.com, comes from their original idea, which is, hey, if you're popular, it's going to pay. It's going to help you earn
money. Exactly.
I want to thank the two sponsors who made this interview happen. The first, guys, Brand new sponsor. Go check out COOalliance.com/Mixergy. Really, forget about signing up for anything. If you have somebody who's a second in command, just go and set up, see if you qualify. If you do qualify, great. You can have a conversation with them. If you don't, then move on. They're really aiming for a specific group of people, certain amount of revenue, certain like amount of seriousness and so on. COOalliance.com/Mixergy. And then finally, if you're looking to host a website, go to hostgator.com/Mixergy or do what Corbett's going to do from now on. Somebody asks him, he's not going to say no to these other people. He's going to say, just go to HostGator.
Yeah, I got someone now.
Good. All right. I think that's everything, Corbett. Thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was fun.
Thanks. Cool. Bye, everyone.